Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Stuart Acuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
Hi, this is David K. Johnston, and you're listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
Hey, this is Frank Schaefer, author, writer, New York Times bestseller. But I'm here today because I've got a new book called Why I'm an Atheist Who Believes in God. And I'm also on Carson's Corner because corporate media is so one-dimensional in terms of the kind of things they cover that they couldn't comprehend a discussion that would begin with a statement that implies a huge paradox. But I think there's a lot of thinking people out there who understand that life is paradoxical, and Carson's Corner is one of those places you can discuss it. So thanks for being with us.
This is Les Leopold, the author of How to Make $1 Million an Hour, and I just want to tell you that you'll get a rich and rewarding experience by listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Greg Palast, reporter for BBC Television and Democracy Now, and author of the new book Vulture's Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores, and you're listening to Carson's Corner on 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio, radio for the 99%. Help us occupy the airwaves and support Carson's Corner and support 5:30 Underground Progressive Radio.
This is Lamar Waldron, the author of Ultimate Sacrifice and Legacy of Secrecy, those two books, the latter of which will become a movie produced and starring Leonardo DiCaprio in 2013. And you are listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson on Underground Progressive Radio.
Survive. One motive, no hope. It's hard to breathe with Wilson standing around my throat.
Hi, this is Frank Schaefer, author of Sex, Mom, and God. You're listening to Carson's Corner, a show I enjoy. I hope you enjoy it, too. I encourage you to listen.
All right, we're live here on Carson's Corner on Blog Talk Radio in conjunction with the CommonsProjectNetwork.com. My name is Bob Carson, and we have a great show for you here tonight. This Monday evening here, 347-326-9749 is the number if you want to be a part of the program. That's 347-326-9749. We also have the chat room open, and in the second part of the show, Pinko the Bear, one of my mentors, I consider, a man of respect, a man of activism, a man who is true to the political way of life. He really embodies, I think, an activist. And let me tell you, I've spoken about this. We went to the Left Forum, okay? Pinko attended all 3 days. I only attended 2 days. We spoke about this on my last political show. And let me just tell you, I have a lot to talk about because there's so many important concepts that were brought up during these panel discussions. And these are panel discussions that really go beyond the scope of the corporate media. There were a number of panel discussions pertaining to Marxism, pertaining to communist revolution, pertaining to, alternative to capitalism. There was a panel discussion centering the Zeitgeist movement, and it was just stuff that you're never going to hear, and it was great, intellectually stimulating, to say the least. And I got introduced to new material, and I'm going to talk about all of this because I took some notes, and I'm not going to really give you a word-by-word description of what happened, but what I'm going to talk about are some concepts that were brought up in many of the panel discussions that I think are worth repeating and are very, very important. Okay, so you're going to hear that here on Carson's Corner. But let me just really start off by saying that I had so much fun during this event. And, you know me, folks. I don't make no mistake about it. I am very shy socially. I like to be in my own setting. I like to, quote, create my own environment. And I have not really been that active in terms of politics. I don't even like saying politics because it has a negative connotation, but I haven't been active in political issues, okay, issues that affect us every day. And that is partially because I am just awkward socially. I consider myself awkward socially. I'm not really outgoing. I'm a nice guy, but when I meet new people, there's always these awkward moments in which you got to look away, and I attribute that to myself, okay, and that we can have a whole show about how people develop socially and what leads people to, be better networkers or better connectors, as Malcolm Gladwell would say, and other people that don't, other people that perhaps are maybe deficient in that area. But let me tell you, I took the bus up there, and from the moment I landed in New York City, everything was going my way. I took the downtown train to Pinko's place, where he's staying with his girlfriend. And from the moment Pinko, and this is the first time Pinko and I met, we've been talking online for years. He was on my show in 2012, and I bring him up at every show because he is an inspiration to me in terms of his activism, in terms of his appreciation for, alternatives to capitalism. And I don't always agree with everything he says, and that's like all the shows on the Commons Project Network. We don't always agree with everybody on that network 100% of the times, but we're allies. We're guys that have independent shows, and we wear our hearts on our sleeves, okay? And we're both of meager means, and so we have a lot in common. And so when he answered the door, I felt right at home, and I didn't feel uncomfortable at all. We got along really, really good. And on the train ride there, you know, we're talking about the things that we talk about on our respective shows. And it just, you know, it was just a great time. And we went to the John Jay College. And just, you know, from an organizational standpoint, this was a forum that was completely disorganized. There's just no question about it. There's no way other to describe it. We arrived at John Jay College, and nobody knew what was going on. Really, nobody knew where the areas were, and we just kind of took it upon ourselves to start commingling with the other individuals there, and we were inserting addendums into the programs that each participant, each panel member received to direct them throughout the, you know, the conference, and to let them know where the panel discussions were taking place. And then about, you know, maybe an hour or so into doing this, okay, and Pinko is much better, I would say, socially than I am. Pinko is just naturally a sociable guy, and he's making contacts, and me, you know, I'm kind of like to myself, whatever, sometimes, but I'm somewhat sociable. I'm not anti-social, but this guy, Seth Adler, who was one of the coordinators there and a professor, I believe, he pulls me over and he says, no, you're going to do registration. You're going to register the panel guests. And so Pinko was directing traffic to people that came into the building, and I was helping with registration. Now, I wasn't trained. We weren't trained. There was no training. There was no formal organization. I was just put there, and I was supposed to help the panelists, people performing the panel discussions. I was supposed to help them, navigate them, help them you know, confirm their registration and direct them. And needless to say, I was just absolutely inundated at this table. And you know what? As time progressed, I really, really went well into my role, and I helped a lot of people register. And people, you know, I don't know if Pinko will agree with this, but people really seem to come up to us in particular, because I think that, you know, being both males and being both, you know, bigger guys, we maybe some would consider have a commanding presence. And so therefore people just say, hey, those guys know what they're doing. So people would just come up to me left and right. And in the course of me registering people, I got introduced to, you know, several individuals that are very famous throughout the progressive community. Several, quote, radicals like Carl Dix, who I helped register. You know, others, there was a William Bill DeFazio, who you know, my first impression of him, because Bill is, he didn't look like a professor to me, or maybe my, you know, narrow thinking as far as what a professor would represent. But sure enough, I found out, you know, who this man was, and I did a little research on him and determined that he had a show, or may still have a show, on WBAI, which is really struggling for funding. And you know, he's a professor and an author, and as many of these panelists would. But that's another theme really throughout this convention, was the fact that the, you know, just any type of organization similar to this, any type of forum similar to this, is struggling for funding naturally. And I was explaining to somebody who was a libertarian that I work with earlier that because of the nature of these panel discussions, you're not going to find business groups to put this stuff out there, because at the end of the day, if the panelists got their way and the discussions headed into movements, revolutions, these business owners would make less money, and, you know, philanthropic groups are you know, not able to really fund these organizations. So what is going to happen in the future with, you know, forums like this? Are they going to exist? That's really in question, because as we're seeing right now in the United States, these type of gatherings are being just attacked. Being attacked by the corporate structure. And so, you know, there was that question, and that played a role into the disorganization. There's no question about that. I think I spoke to Pinko when we were sitting next to each other during the first day in which we volunteer. And I told him, I said, you know, if this was a right-wing organization, if this was a right-wing event, you could guarantee that there would be a much better level of organization and there would be much more resources poured into this forum because of the money, because it's essentially a business investment for the libertarian, you know, corporate fascist forces out there that are undoubtedly you know, controlling everything. And so, you know, you're just not going to get any type of discussion like this here. You're not going to get 4,000 or 5,000 people amassed into a college, you know, participating in such an event, because I would categorize this, as Ralph Nader does, as a countervailing institution. And we know that the countervailing institutions in our society are being just systematically destroyed. And so, you know, I really think we're moving towards fascism, and this country is getting regressive when it comes to alternative forms of speech, particularly those that are challenging the economic system, because we were the true dissidents there. You know, that's what I felt like at this event. I felt like a true dissident, and the type of analysis that was given and the type of comments that were given, they're unfathomable to the corporate media out there, to the business class, to the agents of the business class, you know, those, the police, the judicial system, the military, the agents. And it's really, really remarkable. But I want to kind of talk about some of the concepts that were brought up here during this great event. We had Cornel West opening up at the very, very beginning of this event, and he was moderated. The event, the first day, was moderated by Amy Goodwin, and Cornell did a great job. He gave a rousing speech that really electrified the audience. And, you know, just some topics here that were brought up by many panelists, and I'll reference them as I go along. But, you know, one of the things that we spoke about, that was spoken about at this event, was the need for a new consciousness to develop. Okay? I think it was Cornell that may have brought that up, the need for a new consciousness to develop, because this idea was also brought up in another panel discussion by Ray Loda, who is a subscriber of the Bob Avakian form of, you know, analysis when it comes to communism. And, you know, during his panel discussion, Loda pointed out to the fact that, you know, during the Mao Revolution, one of the failings, one of the reasons why this was a failed attempt at a revolution was the fact that the old ways of thinking eventually creeped in. The old, you know, capitalist-induced way of thinking crept in, and that changed everything. And, you know, this also can be considered what Peter Joseph spoke about in the Zeitgeist films as a value system disorder, a value disorder of some sort, where we allow certain assumptions to go forward. And these assumptions are inherently indifferent to all of our well-being. You know, like, for example, you know, within our capitalist system, the assumption that capital has to be mobile, capital is more important than labor, right? We have to run our economy like a business. We have to, you know, everything is through the lens of business, and, you know, we have to make an environment suitable for business. Now, we hear this all the time. We hear this from politicians in both parties. It doesn't matter. And the assumption there is that if you center your economy around business, then everybody will benefit, that somehow, you know, we'll have a good society. Well, what about, and I think that this sentiment would be really reflected by, I would say, a majority of the people that I heard from during the panel discussions, the many panel discussions that Pinko and I went to. What if we were operating under the assumption that business is conducted at the expense of the American workers? What if we operated under the assumption that, you know, the profit motive comes at the expense of everyday working Americans, and that in order for someone to be wealthy, in order for a family to be wealthy, and someone has to be poor, there's a give and take relationship among capitalism. You know, what if we changed the consciousness to reflect the idea that, you know, businesses are lucky to be doing business in our country, in which we control the resources, in which we control the commons? What type of society would emerge if we changed our way of thinking? We changed our way of thinking about, you know, labor. We I guess, make it not a commodity. We do not say that human life, human labor is a commodity, as I believe Joe Burns pointed out in the show, is in the Clayton Act. You know, if you start to really analyze this and you start to change your consciousness, okay, then inevitably things would change in this country. And we do not let certain assumptions, you know, get through and subsequently shape our existence, you know? It's you know, a very, very interesting discussion. And another point here, too, that Stanley Aronowitz mentioned, and this is the guy that is basically organizing the left forum. This is the guy that, you know, he joked about during his speech how the headquarters of the left forum is in his office, for crying out loud. I mean, isn't that amazing? That one guy who, you know, is, with all the respect to Stanley, who's an author and professor and very well respected individual, is, you know, into his 70s. He may be even, you know, close to 80. Looks very good for his age. But nonetheless, this is an individual that has already exceeded the life expectancy. And so this is a guy who, you know, how long is he going to be around? How long is he going to be able to do this? Which is why they made an effort to go after younger individuals out there to try to keep this movement, this forum going. But my point is without the money, with the evaporation of, you know, any type of dissent out there, you know, going back to periods of McCarthyism or going back to periods of the Smith Act, where anybody expressing the opinions that we heard during the left forum would be thrown in jail, how long is this event going to last? You know, and how long are people like Stanley going to be able to, you know, have the headquarters in their office? It's unbelievable. It really is. But this is a really important point. And another point that Stanley Aronowitz brought up was the fact that the right wing controls the discourse in America. Okay, and as a result, and this is undeniable, and this is, I think, reflected in Noam Chomsky's analysis of the corporate media and the propaganda model, how inherently these media institutions are flawed. They are, exist almost in a business model to sell, you know, time to advertisers and the sourcing of the corporations that control our media, the funding. All of this leads to a propaganda model in which information is fundamentally anti-worker. And there's no question about that. And that is why we see what we see from our corporate media. That is why, Edward Snowden gets a lot of press and gets a lot of negative media attention while the company he worked for, Booz Allen Hamilton, okay, a company that is based on a model that is wasteful and inefficient, gets no attention whatsoever. This is why in America there is such agitation towards food stamps, right? We have such agitation towards food stamps. You would think that food stamps were responsible for the 2008 collapse, and yet there's no analysis of defense spending that has just doubled or tripled since 1997. We're now at a point where out of every federal tax dollar that goes to the United States government, over 50 cents of that is going to the defense industry. $2 trillion went missing from the Pentagon budget a few years ago. And yet there's no analysis of this because the corporations, the right-wing, control the discourse in America. And this is why we don't have an alternative to capitalism. Us, the dissent, the dissidents, we've disappeared from the national conversation, okay? And, you know, what has emerged from this is what we're seeing right now with capitalism right now destroying this country to the point where you have 50% of Americans that do not have their head above water. You have 80% of Americans, according to one study, that were in poverty at one point. And we know the upwards mobility rates. We know that America is not a upwards mobility. We do not have upwards mobility in America. And this is taking place right before your eyes. Now, another panel discussion that we went to, and this is probably one of the best discussions that I saw of the weekend, was Raymond Lada. You don't know what you think you know about the communist revolution. And this is a very, very important panel discussion, and you know, I'm just starting to study this stuff, and I'm just starting to really get into the study of the communist revolutions, you know, going back to the communist revolution of 1949 and 1976, Mao, the Russian Revolution, 1917, and you know, this is all I'm not well-versed. I'm just starting to expand my knowledge here and just trying to learn about this. But some of the things that were mentioned during this discussion bears repeating, okay? And one of the things that Raymond Lada spoke about during his panel was the fact that these revolutions were transformative, okay? And these revolutions took place in backwards countries really at the spur of the moment. And, you know, regardless of whether or not one regards communism as a viable alternative to capitalism, we have to acknowledge that these revolutions and these revolutionaries, you know, Mao, and others were purposely distorted by the elites in America, the bourgeois press, to maintain supremacy, to maintain a real analysis of what happened. You know, for example, we hear about the Mao revolution, how Mao's revolution was responsible for, you know, millions and millions of deaths, and you know, it was all because of this new economic system being put in place. Well, you know, there is a debate about that. Okay, and if you look at the sourcing, that much of the sourcing that goes into, you know, this anti-communist, you know, reflective anti-communist rhetoric and reporting and sourcing and fill in the blank, you'll see that much of it, as Raymond Lada points out, was based on lies. And, you know, and I think this is for obvious reasons, okay? This is just getting people to essentially consent, essentially submit to the idea that, you know, capitalism is the end-all, be-all. capitalism, there is no alternative. As Maggie Thatcher said, there is no alternative. And there are those that say, and David Harvey was one of them, David Harvey spoke at this forum, that it's easier to imagine the end of the world than it is an end to capitalism. And this goes back to the first point I was making about a change of consciousness, okay? A change of just thought that would allow us to go past this and to really, start looking at alternatives. And it's all very, very important points. You know, and I don't feel comfortable enough really talking about the communist revolutions, because I just don't feel that I have really done the research yet. And maybe someday I will be. Maybe someday I'll be comfortable enough to just talk about, you know, some of the problems with the revolutions and whatnot. But I just don't feel comfortable. But, you know, one of the points mentioned during this particular panel was the problems with capitalism are obvious, and capitalism cannot solve problems, okay? And this is pointed out in Alan Moss's book, The Case for Socialism, is that, you know, we here in America, we tolerate capitalism and what it doesn't do. We tolerate an economic system that is not and cannot address problems, okay? Capitalism is not here to address problems. Capitalism is here to create scarcity, and scarcity breeds class division, where you inevitably have, because of this economic system, a great consolidation of income and wealth, and that leads to the problems that we experience now. Without further ado, let's go to Pinko the Bear, host of Pinko the Bear, the Pinko the Bear Show, here on Blog Talk Radio. Pinko, can you hear me?
I can hear you well. I'm just using my laptop's microphone, so can you hear me?
Oh, you sound great, man. You sound loud and clear. In fact, I can just envision exactly where you are in your apartment. You know what I mean?
I am sitting there with the window open and, yeah, having a cigarette and having some red wine.
That's
yeah,
awesome.
It was really, really great to meet you and to do this thing this weekend. That Bob Avakian talk, for folks who don't know, I got a lot of Pinko commie, lefty leftist friends, and they all rag on, the Revolutionary Communist Party, the RCP. They say things all the time. It's the cult of Bob. It's the it's all his way or the highway. And I hear all this kind of sectarian talk all the time. And I think this was and it could be that once you're inside the organization
right.
It could be, but I think that that's not a reason to not go to the panel.
Right.
And so for your folks that are listening. That's why I suggested that we go to that one, because, well, I always hear this shit about, the RCP, RPC, whatever it is.
Yep.
Yeah, RCP. And Bob. And so I thought, let's go. And I thought Ray Loda's talk was great. I think he's very affable and he appears very genuine. And I think he made a really good point about the way history gets written by the victors, basically. And we don't know what we think we know, not only about the communist revolution in China, but about Russia, about Venezuela, about Iran, which is really relevant now, about Ukraine, about Vietnam, any place where people are rising up because they don't want colonialism, they don't want capitalism, they don't want to be under the thumb of a foreign power or have an economic system enforced upon them. They're painted as these terrible people that are trying to dominate the world and, rape your grandmother and sell your sister into slavery. I mean, it's just, it's insane. And so I think everybody should always be skeptical when they hear about how bad somebody is or how bad this group is, and they should really check it out and forget about the knocks on personalities and the character assassinations or the characterizations, but look at the content. And I thought the content in that discussion was pretty excellent, and everybody can benefit from it.
Well, that's exactly it, and I agree with you. And see, you know, even if we don't join this particular group, which I don't have any intention of joining any group that I saw, nonetheless, the content provided, the engagement in a dialogue, the idea of going beyond, the scope of what you hear on so-called progressive radio, going beyond what you hear sometimes, you know, I listen to Tom Hartman, but going beyond that is worthwhile. And the work that and the discussion that we had, which by the way, I picked up the newspaper and I was reading it on the bus ride home, and it's basically a prelude, I believe, or a shorter version of Raymond Loda's book. It is absolutely worthwhile, regardless of what you think, and so that's why it was absolutely worth it, and that's why, you know, we're here discussing it on this show, and so it's just it's really important stuff, and you know, it's expanding your intellectual capacity. I mean, there's just no question about that, and we need that in our society, because I think once you do that, Brad, you're on your way of transforming consciousness.
And we need a revolution of the mind, and then we can have a revolution of our the way that we live. As far as the plenaries, I never heard the term plenary, but for folks who don't know, just like I didn't know, it's, you know, the major show of the day with, you know, three or four folks on a stage with a moderator. We had one Friday, we had one at lunch each day, we missed one on the first day, but we had closing ones on Saturday and Sunday. Do you, what was your favorite part?
Well, I got to tell you, I unfortunately I didn't get to stay for the third day, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show. You know, Cornell was absolutely great, and as I understand it, you were treated by the fact that he actually spoke at the third day, which I was really surprised at. I guess he filled in for someone, and that was he was great. He was electrifying. I really enjoyed. I can never pronounce her name, but I'd be Swami.
Sama. The K is silent, and
yes.
K-S-H-A-M-A.
I don't even have it in front of me. I mean, it's like I wish you'd
Kasama. But she's the Socialist Alternative Party member who got elected to the Seattle City Council, and now we have, I think this was probably one of the bigger things for me. Now we have a $15 an hour minimum wage in a major metropolitan city in the United States. It's in Seattle. It passed today in the city council. Mm-hmm. And the reason she could not attend the closing plenary, and she was replaced by, and somebody else couldn't attend, they were replaced by Cornel West and by, or not by West, they were replaced by David Harvey, and so I got to see him twice, which is fantastic.
Yeah,
she had to run back to Seattle to make that vote. Now there's a lot of loopholes; certain things are excluded, and you know there's all this, you know, this stuff going on, the pushback from the corporate state. But and there's a 10-year, and some said 7, but I think it's 10. I'm pretty sure it's 10.
Yeah,
10-year window where this will be phased in. But a year ago, it wasn't even on the radar. Nobody, no owner of a small business or a big business or any business in Seattle had even heard of the idea that there was a talk about $15 an hour minimum wage. And now, within a year, they've passed it, and it's a matter of making sure that it doesn't get diluted too much. And the really cool thing that I'm finding is that They're in Boston organizing for the same thing. They're in D.C., and I just found out last night, I found out they're coming to New York to open up an office for the Fight for 15, a minimum wage, which will lift so many people out of poverty. The average fast food worker gets $7.35 an hour, and you can't live in the city, and you got to spend an hour and a half on the train because he lives so far away, to get into the city to work. So that's going to be really exciting in the coming year, two, three, four, whatever it takes in the future, that's coming to New York. And if it can come here, it can come to Madison, it can come to Des Moines, it can come to Tulsa. Well, that'll be a tough one, but you know what I'm saying. It can spread.
You know, I don't know if you heard this or not, and I want to kind of get your opinion on this, Pinko, because this talks directly to the minimum wage, what you just mentioned. But in the Zeitgeist panel discussion, there was a panelist named Saul Lustig. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. I believe he was a professor, kind of a young guy, maybe my age, maybe around there. And I don't know if you were there, but he brought up the fact that you have this minimum wage push, the $15 minimum wage, which everybody agrees workers in America need to pay more or need to get paid more. Workers have been treated as commodities. And the city council member that we spoke about, she mentioned the fact that businesses had no choice but to accept this piece of legislation, and they have to put up with the lobbying efforts and the flack from business to try to reverse these gains, which would ultimately go to workers. But Lustig made the point during the Zeitgeist panel discussion that this is great, but at the end of the day, it's the system of capitalism, the inherent anti-worker structure of capitalism that could potentially either reverse gains or just basically make this insignificant. And one of the people that attended the Zeitgeist panel discussion was someone who worked on this campaign and was very active. And she was, she's like, this I'm offended by you saying that this is insignificant because the problem is the system with itself. What is your opinion on his take with regards to the raising of the minimum wage in the capitalist system, which, still $15 an hour is great, but is it really a living wage? What do you think about that?
Well, I had this conversation with one of the kind of hardline, I can't remember the name of the group, one of those newspaper selling communist organizations that was outside tabling and putting their, I think Workers Vanguard was their table. Mm-hmm. And it's that, not only that group, but some other groups I find, they poo-poo the Socialist Alternative Party. They say, or the Socialist USA Party, they poo-poo it and say, no, we need revolution now and read this book and understand the scientific method behind it and blah, blah, blah. Maybe not blah, 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 but they go down this road.
Yeah.
And they poo-poo people who are actually doing something to change the material conditions of the lives that we lead. And I ran into this, and when I went to the Socialist Equality Party, the SEP, they run a great website with great content. Again, great website, great content, WSWS.org. I've been using their information and their analysis on my show for years. I went to an open meeting. There were 25 people there. 22 of them were, over 68, 70, 80. I don't know. They were just like, let me say it. They were a bunch of old Jews. They were children of Holocaust survivors. They were. There's a thing in New York, and I don't want to get into it. But anyway, it was my way or the highway, and they poo-pooed the fact that I was in the IWW and was trying to organize labor, and they poo-pooed the fact that we organized a May Day, poo-pooed the fact that, worked with a 401c3 to feed the homeless, poo-pooed the fact, that was an Occupy. They said, oh, that stuff, no, that's not it. You got to do it this way. It's the revolution. And I think it's bullshit. I think it's absolute bullshit because while this $15 an hour thing, you know, that's a big deal, and it can't, right now it's a big deal, but it can be a really big deal for everybody, not only in this country, but in other countries who have shitty minimum, you know, wages, and so I think that it's, you need both. You need a revolutionary mindset. You need to learn about, you know, the problems with Stalin, the problems with Mao, the problems with any kind of like authoritarian counter-revolution that took over real workers' revolutions. You need that. But we are in that sort of revolutionary time right now. We are there's not enough people thinking this way due to the propaganda. So a win is a win is a win, and they got a win today. And yes, it's not $15 an hour tomorrow for every worker
right.
at Starbucks or a laundromat or a bartender or whatever it is, a gas station attendant, even if they were, I should say, clerks, because they don't have, you know, people pumping gas anymore. But it's a win, and to discount the efforts of people who identify as anti-capitalists and identify with as socialists or communists, and identify with the working class, to disregard that or talk shit about it, in my view, is complete garbage. And so I think, again, even if we can take the information that those groups who talk shit about, the socialist alternative, we take their information, read it, check it out, see how it fits, see how it feels. But I think, you know, there's a lot of paths and there's a lot of moving parts, and that's just that's what we got to do.
You know, you've brought up my next point. It's like you read my mind here. I was going to talk about the material conditions, which definitely shape the way that we view the world. And I think what's happening now, and by the way, I respect your opinion with regards to this victory here. I definitely feel pretty much the same way that you do. But what I think now is happening, and the fact that the folks in Seattle were able to do this, and the fact that there are serious pushes in major cities across America that are trying to raise the minimum wage, could be, I think, reflective of the fact that the material conditions in which workers find themselves in now are just abominable. Now it's to the point where capitalism, and this is brought up many times in many different discussions, capitalism is not about solving problems. Capitalism is causing people many problems, and there's no question about it anymore. I don't even think there's much of an academic debate about income inequality, about worker insecurity, about the fact that we have scarcity running amok, and this is producing a society in which we have ourselves now. And I kind of wanted to get your opinion on it. I mean, have we reached a point now in America, or is it still going to take more damage to occur later on, where the material conditions now are basically making change a necessity, or are we just going to continue on the same path right now until we have another crash? I mean, some people are predicting that in another few years we're going to have another crash, and then we can have the real alternative that we await for.
Yeah, excuse me, I had to close the window. We don't know what's going to happen. I think Hedges talked about that in a couple of talks. Hell, he's been talking about it for years because he's covered revolutions and war zones for, 19, 20 years for the Times. He's been all over the world and he's seen it. And you interview somebody from the insurgent party and they say, well, we don't know. It could be another 10 years. And then, 24 hours later, they're storming the Bastille or whatever the equivalent in modern times. It happened in Yugoslavia when he was there. So we don't know when it's going to come, but it's important to organize and be ready and have answers for our Tea Party friends, our Libertarian friends, our formerly formerly middle-class friends that vote for Obama, thinking, you know, doing everything that he said he was going to do, you know, and they don't really fact-check. So it's important for us to be there for them to have the facts and explain. So, yeah, but you had a multi-part question, but I lost it now. But yeah, I mean, it could happen real quick. I doubt it. And in the meantime, you know, you have to do what you can do in whatever way you can, whether it's a Blog Talk Radio show or showing up for a rally or learning more about socialism, communism, learning more about capitalism and how it really is not our friend. We have to wake up to that. And any way you can get them to do that, I think is a good thing, even if it's just having a conversation over dinner or over drinks with folks who are otherwise politically unaware, or, you know, choose not to follow politics. Because there is no reason to follow. Like, following politics is, you know, basically watching the corporate news channels and thinking you're informed because you know what John Boehner said and you know what Barack Obama said. And that's not being politically aware. That's just being aware of the corporate propaganda, and it's not anything. But we have to reach out to those people, and I don't know when or if it's going to change in our lifetime, you know, dramatically, but I'm happy for the little changes. And when things will get worse, I don't think there's any doubt. The jobs aren't coming back. The manufacturing section is shot. It's all been outsourced. This has been going on for, you know, 30, 40 years, depending on who you talk to. But, you know, the student movement is a great, the younger people, that's where it's going to happen. These old people that come, you know, and I'm 52, right? But these older people who go to the left forum, who are around in the 60s, they're not going to have the energy, and, you know, they're not going to have the muscle. But the students, the young people, have no idea about duck and cover, no idea about the Cold War. No, they weren't propagandized about this stuff. You know, it's, you know, and I don't mean to say, you know, no old people will have the energy, and some will, but you know what I'm talking about. We saw some of the folks at this panel, and God bless, because they're there and they have information that everybody can use. But I mean, my train of thought, I think the student debt issue is going to be huge. You know, kids are going to, they graduate from college, can't find a degree, so they go back to grad school, and then maybe some are going to go to a PhD program. Maybe you know somebody like that. They rack up all this debt. It can't be discharged in the courts because the capitalists have set it up that way through the laws. That's fertile ground for recruitment for the revolution, and I think that point was brought up in FIST, a panel we went to, one of our first panels, Fight Imperialism, Stand Together, FIST. They're on Facebook. They're an organization here in New York, Young Communists, Caleb Maupin and some other folks. I had Caleb on my show last week. It's excellent. I would tell people to go to that. At any rate, those are the people. They're not propagandized. They're not afraid of the words. They understand capitalism sucks. They haven't, you know, lived 40 years listening to how great capitalism is and we're spreading democracy in the world. They're not buying it, and I think those in power probably already recognize that, and that's part of the reason for the and they recognize the coming cataclysmic consequences of capitalism, and I think they're preparing for it, and that's why we have an increase in the police state, the spying, the vacuuming up of information, the crackdown on activists like Cecily McMillan, throw her in prison, you know. So anyway, that's probably more than you asked for. But
no, it's great. I mean, and we got about 5 minutes, and I just want to get, because I wasn't there the last day, and you posted a video, I didn't get a chance to see it yet, of a great discussion with, it looked like, Dr. Richard Wolff and others. And what were some of the highlights from the last day at the Left Forum?
Yeah, it was Barbara Bowen. She's the head of a public union. There was Richard Wolff, and maybe was West up there? I can't. There were so many channels, yeah. But here. Oh no, it was Rob Robinson. And so here's. There was a great. Everybody should watch it. It's not on YouTube yet. I looked for it because I want to get sound clips for my show tomorrow night at 11 p.m. Eastern.
Nice.
But the takeaway. Amy Goodman moderated it, and my favorite part was when she asked these, you know, three folks, how is it that, what's your personal story? How the hell did you get here? You know, like, you're all, like, educated, you know, people, you've got a little money. But she didn't say that, but she inferred it. Like, how did you get here? And they all told their stories, and all of the stories were powerful. But Richard D. Wolff, and I won't take too much time on this, but here's his narrative. Basically, he's a, you know, first-generation German. His parents were both professors. They had good jobs in Germany, but you know how that goes. They got to come to America, get the hell out of Germany before the shit hits the fan. Uh-huh. So their degrees are no good. They have to take these very low-wage, immigrant-type jobs, you know. Just, you know, it's a very familiar story. Uh-huh. And he felt obligated to make up for what, you know, what they lost. And his parents were very happy to obligate him and tell him exactly what he had to do. He had to get educated, go to all the best schools, work, 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 you know, study, study, study. So he went to Harvard. Then he went to Stanford. And then he went to Yale, right? So he's got this pedigree, this great pedigree. But he learned something. And what he learned is how much fuckery is going on with the capitalist system, these douchebags, these horrible people. And he learned how to, like, you know, he learned how to put a pipe in his mouth and hold it right, and how important a tweed jacket was, you know, all this nonsense. And he saw through it. And, you know, he would get in discussions at parties, you know, cocktail parties, and people would, like, get on him. What, you sound like a Marxist, you know, you sound like a communist, and you sound... And he would just look at him and smile and say, hey, I went to Yale, I went to Stanford, I went to Princeton. Show him his pedigree. Fuck you, you know?
Yeah.
Right? So basically, he thanked those institutions, not for teaching him so much,
right,
but he thanked those institutions for allowing him the privilege of having the pedigree so he can say, fuck you to capitalism for 20 years as a working professor all around the country at different institutions of higher learning, and that the crowd, including myself, ate it up because it was such a great story. It's like he used the system against itself, and it was a crowd pleaser. He's a funny storyteller, way better than I, but when that clip becomes available...
you're going to post it.
I'll
yeah,
post
we got,
it
we got 30 seconds
it
left here.
It was awesome.
All right, listen, give people your website. You got a show tomorrow, and any place they could find you on social media, my friend.
Sure. Yeah, on Facebook, my real name is Brad Holhut, H-O-L-H-U-T, you know, / A-Bear, or in parentheses, A-Bear, A-B-E-A-R. Pinko the Bear on Facebook, The Pinko the Bear Show. Bob, you and I are both part of an aggregating site for lefty-leftist content, various folks with different shows, called thecommonsprojectnetwork.com.
That sounds great, brother. Thank you very much, and we look forward to your show tomorrow, man.
All righty. Thank you, Bob.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, that does it for this edition of Carson's Corner. My name is Bob Carson. Just a real quick reminder, you can friend me on Facebook at facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. You could follow me on Twitter.com at twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. And make sure to follow me here on Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/Carson's Corner. And, of course, check out the commonsprojectnetwork.com for great independent, non-corporate-owned, non-corporate-sponsored, from the heart, from the sleeve radio show. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect.